So my name is Tomás Asin, and I'm a graduate student from Virginia Tech, and today I'm going to talk about the genomic analysis of the domestication of Syningia speciosa, which is actually part of my dissertation project. This is a brief outline, and I'm going to take most of the time talking about the genetic variation and kind of population structure that in my samples. So hopefully we all can agree here that plant domestication is just a selection process to adapt wild plants for human use across usually different ecological geographical regions. This graph is just to give you a time frame on domestication. You can see that, for example, wheat and barley are among the oldest crops around, and they were domesticated about 11 to 9,000 years ago. So why study Syningia speciosa? So you can read by yourself through the whole list, but I'm just going to mention two of the most important points. The first one is that it's been recently cultivated, just about 200 years ago. So if you put it with the time frame that I just showed you, that's just a tiny little amount. And the second one is that within such a short period of time, we have been able to generate an amazing amount of phenotypic variation. So we were wondering about what's going on there. So a little bit about the history of Syningia speciosa. It's actually native to the Atlantic forest biome in Brazil, as you can see over there. And in 1815, it was actually introduced into England. And it became very, very popular within just a few years. And it actually got spread around the world very quick. And it reached the U.S. potentially as soon as 1819, as you can see there. One thing to have in mind is that while in England, you can see that there's a big difference between the wild type and this type over here. And this is the wild type flowers, which are zygomorphic flowers, actually turn into actinomorphic flowers. And this mutation, this shape of flower is actually fixed. It's practically being fixed among the cultivated material that we currently have. So among the objectives of my project is to describe the genomic changes associated with the domestication of Syningia speciosa. And for this presentation, I'm going to focus on trying to identify hybridization events, genetic bottlenecks, identify important founders of the domesticated populations, as well as to identify some loci associated with domestication traits. So you can see here, this is actually the Syningia tribe. You can see that it's a big tribe and has a lot of different species with a lot of variation, like different growth habits. And as you can see in this picture, very different pollination syndromes. So our species is located right here in the clade Syningia. You can see that the whole tribe has three main clades, Dircaea, Corytoloma, and Syningia. Our species falls right here. And the interspecies hybrids between the tribe are very common, even among between clades. So because we were trying to identify hybridization events, we actually sample a lot of species among the clade, as well as a bunch of cultivated and wild types of Syningia speciosa. So Syningia speciosa, we got about 58 individuals and 57 other individuals among the whole tribe, including 9 hybrids. So this is the geographical regions of just a few samples that we included in our data set. I don't actually have the points for all the relaxations that I actually have there. So we characterized our samples using GBS. I'm not going to bore you with all the details about the pipeline, but you can ask any questions later on. And these are the results from the principal component analysis across the entire tribe. So the first thing you can see is that we managed to keep about 10,000 SNPs across the entire tribe, and these are non-missing SNPs. So I think that's pretty good. The other thing you can see is that we actually managed to explain about 95% of the variation using just the first two principal components, so I think that's pretty good. And if you remember the other graph, the tree that I showed you with the clades, these are the three groups that separated very well with these two principal components. Another thing is that all the individuals in Sinensis speciosa group right there, this is both cultivated and domesticated, cultivated and wild types, all mixed in there. Another thing to see is that you see this kind of turquoise dots. Those are interspecific hybrids of known parents. So, for example, you see that they always fall in between their parents. I have highlighted here three examples for you. You can see that's always the case. I have more of those around here, but just a few of them. And so from this picture, we can infer that actually all the phenotypic diversity that we have created within Sinensis speciosa is not due to inter-specific hybridization. So it doesn't seem like it, at least. Now, this is the second principal component analysis, and this is exclusively within Sinensis speciosa. You can see that we managed to keep, of course, more non-missing SNPs, 25,000, just because we have less individuals and they're more related between each other. However, we didn't manage to explain as much variation, about 67% of the variation, which is not bad at all with only the first two components. And then we have, again, very nice grouping. Here we have the domesticated types over here. The second group, I call it semi-domesticated types because they're actually very old cultivars that are very old-looking types. So they don't look domesticated, but they're cultivars. And here I have highlighted all the wild types. So you can see that just by looking at the graph, you can see that there's a reduction in genetic variation potential, and we're going to measure that later on. Just like in our interspecific hybrids, you can see that intraspecific hybrids fall in between parents, so just as expected. And the most important thing to note here is that we only have two wild types nested within the domesticated types, which is Avniani Meyer. This section was collected very close, actually in Rio de Janeiro. And then we have another section here, which actually we don't know where it came from or what the name of it is. But it's very likely that they actually came from the same population, probably. This is just to show you a little bit of the phenotypic variation that is actually in the wild types. You can see that there's not much variation. You can see that there's only purple flowers, very similar in shape, and kind of purplish, maybe white. Well, then when you take a look at the domesticated types, and there you go. You can see there's a lot of phenotypic variation. I mean, just in color, in number of colors, corolla, the petals, patterns, everything. And this is just to give you a close-up of the phenotypic diversity that you can compare cultivated against wild types. Now, we also did a mixture analysis, and I'm going to go through this very quickly because of the time, but you can see that when we assume two groupings, we have all the wild types over here, and we have our cultivated here, and they separate almost perfectly. The only wild types that are associated with the cultivated ones are Avniani Meyer and that unknown one. So this verifies what we found before. The same thing happens when we assume three groups, always Avniani Meyer associated with cultivated types. And when we go to four groups, you can see that the domesticated types actually start to split, and these over here are actually newer cultivars compared to these ones over here. So Avniani Meyer is still associated with the semi-domesticated types and mostly the older cultivars in this group over here. And then we came up, we use a different analysis also. This is fine structure, this is a Bayesian haplotype-based analysis just to corroborate all of our findings. And in effect, we saw the exact same thing, wild domesticated and Avniani Meyer and unknown, following the same group as domesticated types. So by now, we're pretty confident that Avniani Meyer is an important founder of the domesticated types. A little bit about the diversity stats. We calculated the Theta-Watterson coefficient as well as pi. And what you can see here is that actually the coefficients got reduced by between 40 and 60% each. So that's a sign of a fairly strong genetic bottleneck there, reduction of genetic variation. But the most striking fact to me was actually this number that about 72% of the SNPs that are polymorphic among wild types are actually fixed within domesticated types. And that number goes as high as 86% if you only take into account minor alleles with frequencies lower than 5%. And just to put this into context, for example, with rice, where 82% of the SNPs found in the wild ancestor also segregate on the cultivated Oryza sativa. So the relationship is flipped over there. So very strong genetic bottleneck. A little bit, very quick. Okay. In the QTL analysis, we constructed an F2 population. We crossed the Empress, which is a cultivated type, with the Busios. We developed an F2 population with 160 individuals. You can see them segregating over there. And I'm going to talk about two traits. You can see that, for example, for color, we found a 3-to-1 segregation, Mendelian segregation. So we determined it was single gene, very easy. The second one actually showed this bimodal distribution. You see that the parents are the wild one over here, the empress here. By the way, I forgot to mention, this is the flower angle, which is a proxy that we use to determine the whether the flower is zygomorphic or actinomorphic. It turned out to be a very good approximation. So if we get the individuals that are underneath these two peaks, we can see that we also obtain a segregation of 3-to-1. So we believe that it was a single gene. And when we take a look at the QTLs, you obtain two very strong QTLs in different chromosomes for flower color and flower symmetry or shape. So I haven't found a candidate gene for flower color yet, but for flower symmetry, I took a look at gene and I got pretty excited about it because I found a mutation that co-segregates perfectly with the phenotype in our collection. So I was so excited, I was 100% sure that this was actually the gene that was controlling these, and then 6 months later, Chinese group actually published this gene in Sininja Speciosa, and I got really sad. So they beat me to it, but they actually proved that it's actually this mutation that is causing this. So what I'm going to do. So to conclude, there's no evidence of hybridization events, which I think is amazing considering the amount of phenotypic diversity that we have put into that Sininja Speciosa and to domesticated types. If you take a look at roses, for example, or lilies or amaryllis, all of those have a lot of phenotypic diversity, but they're highly hybridized plants. That's not the case with Sininja Speciosa. We quantify, not happy with that, we quantify a very strong genetic bottleneck on top of that. And the genetic bottleneck could be generated by mainly two reasons. One is a strong founder effect, because you saw that only one population is actually the founder of all the domesticated types. And on top of that, we have this very strong genetic sweep because that mutation that I show you is spread across all every single domesticated type. And that mutation only happened once in 1845 in England, so all the domesticated types had to be crossed with them. This plant has to be in the background to carry that mutation with them. And that's it. So I think I'm in time. With that, I would like to thank everybody who's been part of this project. If you guys have any questions, I would be happy to answer. No? Okay. Thank you. Oh, sure.
So you can make a cross with Speciosa.
Yeah, I don't know which ones are specific. Well, there's people who have done crosses of Speciosa with other species.
So, what kind of traits do you think you can bring to Speciosa from other species?
Well, the whole tribe is very diverse phenotypically. So, I don't know which species are compatible with Speciosa specifically. But I bet you can create even more phenotypic diversity if you start just creating interspecific hybrids. different flower shapes, even different and maybe longer flowers, like you saw in the tribe. There's flowers with very long pollination tubes, and of different colors, probably.
I'm not too familiar with Syringa in terms of what the cultivars are. For the wild types, you said that most of the cultivated ones are all descended from Amanita. For the wild ones, are those on the market at all, or is it?
No, I actually obtained those from the Gestionaria Society. There's a society actually about these plants. These people are very passionate about the plants. So they were very kind to share the plants with me, and specifically a couple of members actually are the ones who gave me most of the material that I work with. Yeah. Well, I ran out of time. If you have any questions, we can talk later. Thank you so much.